You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watch-A-Thon of Wrestle-On.
The podcast that we're doing right now. That's our new tagline.
Put it on our merch. Today we're going to be talking about the fourth and final serial of the 24th season of Doctor Who, the first full season of the seventh Doctor, Dragonfire, which consists of three episodes that aired from November 23rd, 1987 to December 7th, 1987.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check him out at Matt... You can check his... God damn it.
You can check him out at mattgolden.xyz. That was so fucking easy.
For you, maybe. It should be for me. I do it every week.
You can check him out at mattgolden.xyz. That's his website URL on the internet.
Yeah, go do that. Do it. Hi.
Hello.
How you doing?
Thanks for coming here today.
Thanks. It's nice to be here.
Yes?
I'm sorry, you're just looking at the cat's butthole.
I wasn't looking at her butthole. I was looking at the back of her legs. That's one of the places she's been overcleaning, and she has hurt herself.
Now we're oversharing.
And I was trying to see if it had healed.
Had it?
I don't know. She moved too fast.
Ah, so, hey.
What?
Is there anything we need to talk about before we dive into the episode? Anything going on in our lives?
I've got some things to fucking say.
All right, say them.
I'm really tired, and I just want to put that right out there at the beginning. It's 3 p.m. I took a nap that I should not have taken. You know...
I let you take the nap because I was like, they'll be well rested for the podcast.
No, it backfired. It wasn't a restful nap. It was a backfiring kind of nap. Where it was like, oh, all I've done at all today is kind of lay around. So now I feel like shit.
Good energy for the pod.
I just want to put that out there now.
Good to know.
Set expectations low right here.
Are you planning on exceeding those expectations? Is that your ultimate goal?
No. Oh. This is just your fair warning. I'm going to listen.
This
I'm going to try.
Season finale energy.
I'm going to try my best. I am. I am. I might be getting sick. I'm not sure. I don't feel great. But it might just be because I
napped
in the middle of the day, which never has good results. And I also haven't done anything yet today. It's 3 p.m. and I haven't done anything. I'm in my pajamas. I'm really oversharing now. I'm just... Be gentle with me, that's all. I'm having a rough time over here.
I love you.
I wish I could show up to work like this.
With this...
With the same energy of like...
honesty.
Like, look, I'm not feeling it today. I'm not feeling great. So I just showed up at work today in sweatpants, and I'm going to keep all the lights off.
I would also be interested in showing up to work like that, but I'm always just super pumped and happy and excited to start a new day of work, to get right to the grind, you know?
Do you remember...
Love Mondays. Love them.
Do you remember the week at our...
Previous
I won't say
job?
Where, that was genuinely true, and how that ultimately turned out?
To be, I just jinxed us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did enjoy going into that job, and then it turned out to be...
It was bad.
It was bad.
It was a bad place where bad things happened. Anyway... Let's talk about Doctor Who.
All right, let's talk about Dragonfire, shall we? Episode 1, which I have called A Dragon of Fire and Ice.
Oh, that's a reference to one of those things.
Yeah, the musical chairs thing. Game of Thrones.
That's the dumbest bit you've ever fucking done. Sure.
But also Dragon Fire, and also it takes place on Ice World, the cleverly named Ice World, which is made up of ice and it's world.
It's a world made of ice. I don't know, right off the bat, where anything on this ice world is in relationship to the other things on this ice world. We sure do have a lot of sets that presumably are around each other.
Though, I mean, well, there's a large portion of it that is, you know, supposed to be labyrinthine. Like, it's supposed to be sort of confusing, and they're looking for treasure.
I mean, the whole world.
Well, here's what you got. You got Ice World.
The mall.
You got the mall.
Am I wrong? It's a mall.
I guess it's a mall. Yeah,
it's a mall with a food court.
There's a restaurant, and it's a trading outpost, is what it's called.
It's a mall.
There's the trading outpost. There's the ice world chunk on top of the planet, and the rest is just like barren.
There's only so much that's like exposed.
Habitable. Yeah. Yes. There's like the dark side of the moon and blah 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 or whatever.
Yes.
Or dark side of the planet. So there's like a cold side and a hot side.
And the hot side's too hot.
It reminds me a lot of, and this came later, but the planet, the alternate Earth. The Super Mario Brothers movie, because in that...
God, you always find up a way to bring Mario Brothers movie.
The planet has the exact same setup. It's one city, like Koopa City or whatever it's called. New Koopa City. I don't remember the name of it, but it's one city, and the rest of it's just a big desert. It looks virtually identical. Like, there's a scene with a globe where they spin it and they show, like, the whole planet's desert except for this, like, one city. And that's how this planet looks. Like, it looks like a big desert with one city at the top. Which I was always slightly annoyed about in the Super Mario Brothers movie, because that's what Super Mario Brothers the game shows you. One world, huh? One type of world. It's not like there's an ice world, there's a fire world, there's airships. There's, like, so many, like, different locations in the Super Mario game, and they went, this whole planet's a fucking desert.
This is what you want to talk about right now.
Yeah. It's relevant to the times we live in, because they're about to make a new one. A new Mario Brothers movie with Chris Pratt. So we're being relevant with the children. So, we haven't said anything about this episode.
No, we have not.
Okay, but we were describing how the planet works, I guess.
It works exactly like Super Mario.
Yeah, exactly. So we start off in a sort of cryogenics lab where a group of men are being led into this...
A cryogenics lab, which is in relationship to the mall. How?
Hallways.
Okay. Is the cryogenics lab a part of the mall? You've got the freezer store, you've got the food court... You've got the cryogenics lab.
Yeah, it's the base. It's Kane's base. It's basically headquarters. Because they're led in by a woman named Balaj. Basically, they've been bought by Kane. And they're going to be put into cryogenics against their will.
And then they won't remember anything when they wake up.
Yeah.
So they're going to make good soldiers.
Mercenaries, yeah. They can just make them do whatever they want. But they're going to be part of Kane's army. And Kane is a very creepy motherfucker.
Yeah, this guy sucks.
I actually really like this actor. Like, he's doing a good job. This character is legitimately creepy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm saying the character sucks and I hate him because the actor is doing a good job playing a villain.
And then we establish what his superpower is because one of the bot people, they're all part of a crew. We'll later learn what crew they were a part of, but I'm going to say that for a sec. Anyway, one of them runs off, grabs a gun, runs into this room that has a pedestal where, like, someone can lay down. We'll learn that's Kane's sleeping chamber. And there is this old guy.
This is one of my favorite characters in the serial.
The old guy? The artist?
The artist, he's carving this large ice statue. He never gets any lines. He's just carving. I think it's only for this episode, right?
It might be a little bit in the second episode, too. I don't remember. He just sort of, like, things happen around him. And Kane's like, pay no attention to this. Do your art. And he's like, all right, I don't give a shit. Ka-ching, ching, ching. Yeah, but he's just making an eye statue of a woman. But anyway, this guy runs in there, is very confused by this eye statue, bumps into like a pot, like there's a big, I don't know, thing. He drops his gun into it, and it just steams. There's like dry ice. It's really cold. It's freezing cold in there. And then this actually may be the first time we see Kane, as he reaches in and pulls the gun out with his bare hands and hands it back to the guy. And he holds it. And he's like, ah! And it's too cold. And he drops it and the gun shatters.
Which is pretty neat.
And then Kane's like, you can't run away. That's bad. And then grabs the man on the face, like cradles his head in his hands, and steam comes off of his hands because Kane is ice cold as well. And he kills that guy by just touching his face with his cold, cold hands, which is a lot like what it's like to live with Tony in the winter.
What? First of all, you have cold hands always. It could be a fucking 90 degree summer.
We do it to each other, but I got there first.
And you're going to touch me with your cold, cold hands, and I don't even understand why they're cold.
Look, my limbs are long, so circulation is bad. I can't get the heat to the extremities.
You should wear gloves, maybe. Your hands are always cold.
Are they cold right now?
Sure, they're kind of warm right now.
So, you're wrong.
You're
wrong. Spreading malicious lies.
Your hands are always so cold.
Do you want to touch my feet, though?
No.
My feet are freezing.
What? You don't have socks or shoes on or anything?
No.
All right.
It's a real, chill vibe we're doing here today. So, anyway, that guy dies. And that's our bad guy, Kane. And then we meet our good guys, the Doctor and Mel. They arrive. We find out it's a space trading colony on the dark side of the planet, Svartos. They go into this, like, mall area, I guess, and they meet a child who attempts to scare Mel, and she's wearing a dragon mask on. This kid, by the way, her name is Stellar, which is a good name.
That is a pretty good name. What's this kid's deal?
I don't know what the episode is fascinated with this character, and I don't know what her point is.
Is this someone's niece? This feels like someone's niece.
I feel like this is I think her character might be a metaphor for something, but I don't know what it is. I think there's like a purpose to her, and I honestly can't grok it. I don't know what it is. What's the purpose of Stellar? Anyone know? I ask and wait for a response. But yeah, she does a little boo at Mel. Mel screams and then smiles, and she's finds this child adorable. They go into a restaurant. They're like in the background, like ordering milkshakes. And in the foreground, we can see Glitz trying not to pay a bill to this waitress who has a line or two. But she's not very... They don't really feature her prominently at this point.
There's no reason to think that she's not just an extra.
Yeah. And I was like, that looks... I've seen pictures and video of Ace before. And I was like, that looks like Ace. Is that Ace? That can't be Ace. They didn't, like, pay any attention to that character. But it's Ace.
She also is just, like, in the background of this scene, like, without lines. I kind of like that. I also like how much she just clearly does not give a shit about her job.
Or Glitz. She frequently calls him a bilge bag. She calls him a bilge bag 5 times during this serial. It's the only thing she calls him. Which, if... you go by the backstory that the writer wanted to do.
I will not.
The backstory that the writer wanted to do was that Ace lost her virginity to Glitz, which is really gross.
Hey, guess what? I've decided that's not canon and we'll never talk of it again.
Fair. I mean, Glitz is gross, but I don't think he's that gross. She's 18.
16.
There is a scene where she says, I'm 18. Anyway, the Doctor and Mel are like, hey, Glitz. And he's like, I don't know you. But he recognizes Mel, but not the Doctor, because this is a new Doctor for him. But he's like, I'm here on a philanthropic mission. I'm doing good things. And then he is grabbed by Balazs, who says, you sold Kane some rotten fruit, and he wants his money back. He says he can't because he lost the money in a card game. And then she's like, okay, but you also sold us all of your crew, so you should have money. And he's like, hey, lost that money too. He starts like asking the doctor for help, and the doctor is just like,
it's
no.
It is wild that we bring this character back. Like, look at this lovable scamp. He sells people.
Good point. But he has 72 hours to pay the money back for the fruit, I guess, or they will take his ship, the Nosferatu. It actually wasn't going to be Glitz originally. It was going to be a new character. I want to say Pigskin, a Razorback, something like that, some sort of weird name. But then when Andrew Cartmell read it, he was like, this character seems a lot like Glitz, so let's just make it Glitz.
I feel like Glitz isn't a good enough character to warrant the treatment that he gets. I mean, this is his, what, third appearance?
Mm-hmm.
He's fine.
Yeah, but I don't mind it necessarily. Like, I think it gives you a little bit more of an end, a quicker end to the character.
Ooh, that's
than
fair.
If you had just a new character. Because, like, if you're going to have a character that's like, this character is basically Glitz, why not go ahead and make it Glitz? So you don't have to establish who this character is. You can just go, oh, that's Glitz. He's a dick. He's a bilge bag, you know? Then we have a brief scene where Kane freezes all of the crew, and then that's when he says the whole thing about how they'll lose their memory. But then we come back, and we properly meet Ace for the first time. She just doesn't seem very happy with the manager / bartender. I'm not sure how the setup works here at this restaurant. But she says something about, like, I hope the dragon gets you. And Mel's like, dragon? And she just sits down at the table. Like, yeah, there's a dragon. And there's probably a treasure with a dragon and all this. She just stops doing her job to sit down and have a chat with the doctor and Mel.
She's like, this is way more interesting. Hang on.
And then Mel's like, that's why you wanted to come here, doctor. You wanted to find a dragon. And he's like, yeah.
Of course I did.
But there's also, like, I don't remember what is said. They say something that excites Ace. We don't know her name yet, but she just goes, Ace! She says Ace a lot when she's excited. Like, things are cool. She screams the word Ace.
Like a Pokemon.
But speaking of weird verbal tics, they're talking about the dragon, and the doctor says something about, or Mel says it's like the dragon's supposed to be around here, nobody's ever seen it, and she says something like, it's like the Loch Ness Monster. And he's like, I tried to do it and I couldn't. He says it in the way that he says it. Lock.
Lock.
I can't do it. He says it.
You're too American.
I'm
it's
too
okay.
American. He says it very Scottishly. He rolls it out, and then they just sort of, him and Mel sort of just back and forth at each other. And it's pretty cute. Anyway, the dragon guards a treasure to which Glitz has a map. So they're going to have to team up with Glitz to find this dragon. But then we find out Glitz got the map in a card game.
Though, I love how convoluted this is.
Right? He got the map in a card game. Though he'll later say, like, oh, it's definitely a real map because I got it from an intellectual in a chess match. But he got it in a card game. And Kane had rigged it so that he would get the map, because the map, it is an actual map, I guess, but it's bugged. There's, like, the seal on it, has a tracker on it, and also Kane can listen in on them and spy on them.
For what purpose?
Well, he wants the treasure, which is the aforementioned Dragonfire.
Right.
We'll find out what that is all about as we go in. But I do find it interesting that Glitz calls the map the real McCoy, because the doctor's played by Sylvester McCoy.
Thank you.
He's the real, real McCoy.
Okay.
So anyway, I can't speak today. So anyway, everyone wants to go on an adventure. Everyone wants to go chase the dragon down, but Glitz won't let Ace and Mel participate because they are women.
Do you know what's so gross about this scene? And it's not just the fact that, like, it exists. It's that the doctor's like, well, what are you gonna do?
Well, not actually, because he goes, aw, I wanted to go see a dragon, and sits back down. And then Mel says, it's okay, you can go. And then he's like, oh, cool! And then gets up, back up, and leaves with this misogynistic douchebag. He is like, I won't go because Glitz is sexist.
I think the doctor, though, would just be like, Glitz, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, that would be better. But in the background of this scene, there's just all sorts of, like, aliens and shit in this diner. It's basically a BBC TV budget version of the Mos Eisley Cantina from Star Wars. But there's, like, one alien that has, like, a weird puppet in his lap. It's like a puppet alien.
Do you know what's so satisfying about this? Is that this was another time where I was, like, I was fixating on the puppet in the background. And I was like, Joe, look at how amazing that puppet is. Right. And so then at the end of the scene, after I have been watching it in the background the whole time, the doctor, like, comes up to it and, like, gives it a little pet and it bites him. And it was so satisfying. Because I was like, I'm not the only one who was fixating on this puppet in the background.
That was improvised, by the way. That was amazing. The thing that's, like, interesting about that puppet before it does that scene, there's certain shots of it where the puppeteer is not doing anything with it, and it's just sitting there staring. It's not moving at all. There's literally a shot where it's just staring, and then it's like the guy realizes that they're filming, and then just starts moving it, like, very animatedly. But it's just, like, sitting there, and then it moves. But yeah, it's a cute little puppet. Back at Kane's place, Balazs asks Kane if she can have Glitz's spacecraft. Then he reminds her that he owns her by having her look at her hand, and she has a brand on her hand.
Yuck.
He's like, you can't get away, and then orders the ship to be destroyed, the Nosferatu. Even though they're supposed to give Glitz 72 hours, he's like, puts in an order to have it destroyed, and he's going to go take a nap.
Oof.
In his sleep chamber.
Don't do it. Don't take the nap. The nap will fuck you up.
You'll get all groggy and weird.
And then you'll have to wake up and do a podcast. It'll be awful.
Back in the diner, Stellar's mom, the Ace brings them some milkshakes. She's like, excuse me, these milkshakes are lumpy. And Ace is like, they're supposed to be.
They're milkshakes.
That's how they're made. And like Mel says, that's the ice cream. She says it very specifically. But she's like, well, I want you to shake it up some more. It's bad. She's a real Karen. And then Ace like, says she's not going to. And she's like, well, I've never had, you know, such bad service before. And then Ace is like, well, I suppose you've never had a milkshake dumped on your head either.
I love Ace so much.
She dumps a milkshake on the mom's head. And then the manager comes up and is like, oh, I'm so sorry. You're fired, Ace. And she's like, I'm sorry. I apologize. He's like, no, you're fired. And she's like, she takes the other milkshake and dumps it on his head.
I think what's great about this scene is from the moment that she, like, dumps the milkshake on the customer's head, I'm like, oh, she's quitting.
But she's not.
She's not. She seems shocked when the manager comes up and is like, you're fired. And she's like, no, I promise I'll be better. And it's like, oh, I just assumed that you were burning some bridges. You didn't realize that that's what you were doing?
I've been in some work situations where if I had done something similar, my boss would probably be like, fair enough. I'm surprised you didn't snap sooner. customer service sucks, by the way, if you are unaware. So Mel and Ace leave off because Ace has been fired, and they go to Ace's very messy room, and she changes out of her work uniform and puts on a really cool jacket.
I want that jacket so bad.
It's got like a bunch of like patches on it from like space places and stuff. It's really cool.
I want an Ace jacket so bad.
It's really awesome.
I would look great in it.
But like there's a scene where like, because they're talking and Mel starts cleaning the place up. She's like folding clothes. She's like, leave that alone. Don't do that. She's like, I'm just trying to find a place to clear off a place to sit. She's like, just sit on top of the clothes like everyone else. And this show has never reminded me more of Tony.
You're really going to call me out like that?
Yeah.
Wow.
People know. They've heard of the laundry bet. It's not like things have changed.
Well, they have changed because you put away the laundry now.
I do. I don't know. There's like a big stack in there right now.
Well, we don't really have to like talk about the whole situation right now. Sure. On the podcast, but there's part of it is that you're putting clothes in drawers that are already full. And so there's lots of clothes that are on top of or around that drawer. And then eventually I'm like looking for something that's on the bottom of the pile. And so the pile gets moved. And now it's just kind of the pile is all over. The pile's all over.
So with Ace's very messy room, with Ace's really cool jacket, is this the companion you most relate to?
There's, I think I've said it on the podcast before, there's no way that this isn't going to be my favorite companion. Also, there's zero, just zero chance of this character being straight.
Yeah. Her and, honestly, her and Mel have some good chemistry, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, no. This character is not straight.
Oh, there's something else about her I forgot to mention, which is the fact that anytime she talks to the doctor, she calls him Professor. I don't know where she got that from. She just starts calling him Professor.
I mean, look at him.
Good point. Anyway, she sits down, starts talking to Mel. We find out she's from Earth. She's not from space.
She's from current day Earth.
Yeah. Well, 80s. Current.
Then.
Yeah.
They know what I meant.
It's a little confusing. She was working on some sort of experiment at school, I think, and it caused a time storm, and it's what brought her here. She says that. But also, she says she got kicked out of school. So I'm confused about the timeline. Did the thing that caused the time storm not happen at school? I guess it must not have happened at school.
I don't remember the scene well enough to correct you. But she does say she got kicked out of school for blowing up the art room. And then she delivers one of the best Doctor Who lines ever, which was, they couldn't see how blowing up the art room was a creative act. I love this character. There's zero chance that I'm not going to be so in love with this character.
She's 16, tell me.
I don't mean in a gross way.
To be fair, the actress playing her is definitely a lot older than 16. Oh, also, something you might enjoy as well. The actress who plays her was very annoyed at the fact that she had to shave her armpits.
There's no way this character is straight.
There was something else that she got told to, like, do. I don't remember what it was. I just remember it was, like, they told her to do a thing or not do a thing. And then she just did it more. So, brilliant. Like, I think the actress playing Ace is also very cool. Anyway, there's some announcements being made about how there's a door blocked with ice. There's an ice jam in a doorway. And she gets tired of hearing it. So that her and Mel head out. And she gives Mel four, like, air spray canisters. And she's like, be careful with those. They're full of Nitro 9, which is like an amped up nitroglycerin, which was recently mentioned on Flux, Doctor Who Flux, the first episode, the Halloween Apocalypse. The Doctor mentions Nitro 9. That's not a real thing, right? Is it?
I'm Googling it now to see if the only results are Doctor Who related.
Nitro 9.
If you thought I sounded weird, it's because there was a spoon in my mouth.
Nitro 9 is a powerful explosive created by Ace. Just like ordinary nitroglycerin, except it's got a bit more.
Except nine times better.
I think she says it measures like at 9 on the Richter scale. What is the Richter scale
exactly?
You said exactly?
That you're like, I don't think that's how the Richter scale works. And I was like, that's exactly how the Richter scale works.
The Richter scale is used to rate the magnitude of an earthquake.
You think you can't measure the quake of an explosion?
Okay, but a 9 on the Richter scale is the equivalent of TNT, 20 trillion kilograms.
That's exactly how you would use the Richter scale.
That's a lot, though. That's a lot.
Uh-huh.
That's dangerous, Tony. That's 20 trillion kilograms of dynamite.
It's a lot.
It's rare, but would cause unbelievable damage. An 8 on the Richter scale causes death and major destruction. Destroyed San Francisco in 1906. And she shoves it in a door. I don't think it actually measures a 9 on the Richter scale. That may be pushing it a bit. Anyway, while Kane sleeps in his sleep chamber, Balazs calls and says, oh, hey, you know how Kane ordered that ship destroyed? He just told me he doesn't want it destroyed. Just don't destroy it. FYI, he doesn't want to do that anymore.
I respect that so much.
She is taking some steps to get herself out of here. But then Ace blows up the ice jam with the Nitro 9, and it clears it up. And then she's like, you're welcome. But then Balazs shows up and is like, these people have caused an explosion. Arrest them. And so she arrests Mel and Ace. even though they fixed the problem.
Okay, but also this is a question that I have.
They don't realize that it's a creative act. What?
What are they?
Who?
Kane's people. Are they in charge? That they can, like, arrest people?
They work for Kane. They are owned by Kane.
The whole mall.
All of those people in the, like, white suits, yeah.
No, okay, they all work for Kane. But
yeah.
They can apparently just arrest people. So are they in charge?
Yes.
So, like, Kane runs the mall.
Yeah. He can't leave, though.
But the mall belongs to him.
He's turned it into a thing, yeah.
Okay.
He's, like, maneuvered his way to be king of this place, basically. That he's, we'll learn, imprisoned here.
I wasn't sure I understood that. Because, like I said, I can't... He never really actually interacts with, like, the trading post.
It's because you can't really go there.
But, like, they never make it clear that, like, he's in charge of all those things. The only time that happens is in this scene where, like, his people arrest someone. And I remember thinking after we watched it, like, are they the police? Is he in charge of the whole...
Yeah.
Ice town?
He is in control of it. But he can't leave because he's got that... He's got to be cold.
Yeah.
He can only be in a place that's, like, a certain temperature. Which I don't know why he just didn't arrange for some transport that would be cold. But I guess the dragon would keep him from leaving.
Anyway.
It's a little messy, but yeah. Anyway, that's what happens. They arrest Melanie. Yeah, Kane ordered them arrested because they're working with Glitz. Or he thinks they're helping Glitz, so he's like, arrest them. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Glitz are wandering around in the lower depths of this ice thing, and they find the singing trees, which are these electronic icicles. Like, they just look like icicles, but the Doctor's like, they have some sort of optical Watsit in it. He's like, I don't know what that's about. And Glitz is like, I don't know, but I'm going to steal one because it'll bring me money. I can sell it.
It's probably worth something.
And then they get immediately separated. Glitz just ducks down a corridor and the Doctor is like, where the fuck did he go? And then does a comedic little whoa, slip and slide out of through a different doorway.
He's so good at the physical comedy.
Then Kane tries to, and this is a very good scene. Kane tries to... recruit Ace, ask her to join him, and it's really interestingly shot. Like, the whole thing is on a close-up of Ace's face for, like, the majority of it. It doesn't cut away to Kane. I mean, it does occasionally, but, like, mostly it's on her face, and it seems like she might be listening to him.
Okay, she's kind of stranded here,
and he's like, basically he has this coin. He's like, a sovereign is what he calls it. And he's like, accept it. And then if you're paying attention, it's the brand that's on everyone's hands. So, like, if she gets it, it's going to brand her. And, like, he's trying to convince her to join him. Mel is yelling out, don't do it! And that's when the, like, 18 happens. Because, like, I think she's like, he won't hire me if I'm 16. Mm-hmm. I think that's what she's worried about. But then she reaches out for the coin, then knocks it aside, and then holds up the Nitro 9 and says, freeze. Well, not actually freeze, but don't move. And then she runs out with Mel, and then they run into the dragon.
And that's the cliffhanger. What a great cliffhanger.
It
what a
would great, have been.
What an absolutely excellent place to just end this episode. We have a monster reveal. We see the dragon for the first time. Mel screams in the same... fucking the right tone or pitch or whatever.
As the theme tune?
Yeah.
Well, before we go into what the actual cliffhanger is, because, God, the dragon should have been the cliffhanger. It doesn't look at all like a dragon.
It sure doesn't.
You know what it looks like? It looks like a xenomorph from Alien. It has, like, the same sort of, like, bone structure. It's got, like, a little bone. It's got a gigantic fucking head.
Just the world's largest just head.
Huge. There's a reason for it, but it's huge.
It's got, like, a giant head, but then just on, like, a man's body.
Yeah, but it has, like, this, like, interesting... I like the little, like, bone-looking things popping out of its back. That looks pretty cool. Anyway, and it doesn't, like, go on all fours either. It's just a dude walking around. That's not the cliffhanger.
We have finally gotten to the cliffhanger.
The cliffhanger. I think we mentioned this probably back in the Hartnell days.
I think it's like one of the most famous, like, before I knew anything about Doctor Who, I knew about this scene.
And, like, I knew it was going to be, like, stupid and baffling, but it's truly fucking, it's more baffling than I realized.
It's so much longer than I expected it to be. Because I've used, like, a clip of this scene in promo back when I was making...
it's in New Who, too.
for Doctor Who. What?
I said it's in New Who, too. It's one of when Clara's going through all the, like, jumping back to all the previous doctors.
I did not realize, though, quite how long it actually is. It takes, not only is it the stupidest thing to ever happen, it takes the longest time to happen. It's just watching someone so slowly make a terrible mistake and not being able to help them.
I mean, I've been in that situation. He, like, comes out to, like, a railing. Like, it would have been so easy to fix this by just putting some fake rocks. Like, oh, his way is blocked. And I think that's what it was supposed to be in the script, that his way was blocked. But they don't do that. He just stops, looks over the railing and goes, and then slowly, so slowly, climbs over the railing. Painfully
slowly.
Puts his umbrella at the bottom of the walkway, slides down, grabs the umbrella, and slowly makes his way to the bottom of the umbrella, and then it's just dangling over nothing, and goes, shit, credits.
I've seen, like, you know, behind-the-scenes interviews and stuff, and I know that, like, something went wrong and they weren't able to do what was actually in the script and stuff. But even then, it's like, the way that it turned out, just watching it is like, what is going on in his head? What is he trying to accomplish here? Do you know what the script originally said?
I mean, his way was blocked. He hit a dead end. And, like, there was that lower pathway to get onto.
Also, the thing is, like, that the lower pathway looks so far.
But then also, it's very close in the next episode.
Yeah. Well, yeah, in the cliffhanger, it looks so far that it's like, of course you weren't going to be able to, of course your umbrella wasn't going to get you down far enough to drop down. But then in the reveal in the next episode, like, Glitz is helping him down and just, like, grabs his legs. And it's like, well, how far was that?
Okay, and here's the thing about that. So, because that's the end of episode one. We're now into episode two, which I've called Night of the Frozen Dead. So, Glitz comes out on that same, where the doctor climbed down and sees him hanging. And doesn't help him back up there. He leaves. We cut away to another scene and we come back. And he's underneath the doctor. There's a way to get there.
Oh, you're right. How did he get down there?
I don't know. He found a different path that wasn't stupid as hell.
So yeah, in the cliffhanger, you like look down over the cliff and it's like a sheer drop. Like you almost can't see the path underneath. Unless I was like...
It doesn't make any sense. Okay. It's wobbly.
And then when you see Glitz helping him down...
He's like standing on his shoulders.
He can't be like more than a good like... 2 feet off the ground. He could have dropped the whole time.
I'd say it's probably like 5 or 6 feet off the ground, but still he does he like puts his feet on Glitz's shoulder and then he like just does this the most complicated. He just like falls backwards and he's between Glitz's legs.
This part hilarious. Is absolute gold. Yes, you said that McCoy was like a trained clown. Mm. He's like absolutely putting that to good use in this scene.
The resolve of the much better cliffhanger of the dragon. Well, I don't know if it is better because, God, it's memorable. That literal cliffhanger.
I do love the literal cliffhanger.
I'm trying to figure out which is more stupid. The literal cliffhanger or Oh No, the Floor. And I don't know. At least, Oh No, the Floor is explained why it's bad in the next episode. This continues to just make no sense.
It just continues to be a terrible choice that the doctor made for no discernible reason.
At least with the other one, you can be like, what? What's wrong with the floor? But anyway, the dragon starts firing laser beams at Mel and Ace. And they're like, oh, it can't be a dragon. It has laser beams. We're in sci-fi, baby. Dragons can have laser beams. We're in sci-fi. And then Kane sends Glitz's former crew to capture, I guess, Glitz. I don't know.
He's like, that'll be poetic justice for the crew. Even though they can't remember, they will get their revenge.
My thing is, why? Glitz is getting the thing for him. He hasn't gotten the thing yet. Why is he sending people to stop Glitz?
I don't... You're looking at me like I might have an answer. I don't have an answer.
Anyway, he sends these frozen zombie guys. Or maybe it's, okay, It's because actually Glitz is just going to leave and go back to the ship. He's like, Doctor, help me steal the ship, my ship back. And then I'll give you the map and you can look for the treasure. So
does he not trust the Doctor to find it? I guess he doesn't know anything about the Doctor.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, why would you trust Glitz? He's a doofus. So,
yeah, if anything, this guy just got an incredible upgrade. He should have just let that happen.
And then also, Kane, there's a scene where Kane is, look, the ice statue is almost finished. It's in the way. And we learn that it's his ex-partner, maybe love interest, I think, named, I forget how you pronounce it. It's X-A-N-A. Xana, I think is how he pronounces it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was his criminal partner who was killed when they were trying to escape from the law. Is what he says. He's like, I wish I had been killed instead of you during that escape. Well, later, there's a nice twist to this later on, which we find out she wasn't killed in the escape. She killed herself to not get caught. She committed suicide. So I thought that was a nice little twist. Because, like, it seems like he romanticized it a bit in his head, you know?
Hmm.
Like, they killed her when they didn't. I don't know. I thought it was a nice little subtle sort of thing. Anyway, Mel and Ace find the Doctor's umbrella hanging off of a cliff. And they're like, the Doctor must have come this way. Why the fuck would he go down this way? He's probably dead. All we found is his umbrella. Let's go home. No, they're like, the Doctor must have come this way. And Ace conveniently has a ladder in her backpack.
She throws this, like, fire escape ladder down the thing, and I'm like, I just am gonna love this character so much.
You love a prepared girl, huh? And then another amazing scene happens. So the Doctor and Glitz get outside of where the Nosferatu is. It's being guarded by a guard, and the Glitz is like, Doctor, can you distract the guard while I break onto my ship? And the Doctor's like, sure, fine. And he goes up and proceeds to have a very philosophical discussion.
This is such a great scene.
It very much feels like a Douglas Adams scene.
How do you not have word for word the dialogue in your notes?
I'm looking up the transcript right now. So we're gonna do the whole thing here. Actually, do you wanna cosplay it? Do you wanna like?
Oh yeah, send me. Who do you want to be?
Who do you want to be?
I don't want to say the big line, so I'm going to be the Doctor. Excuse me, what's your attitude towards the nature of existence? For example, do you hold any strong theological opinions?
I think you'll find most educated people regard mythical convictions as fundamentally animistic.
I see. That's a very interesting concept.
Personally, I find most experiences border on the existential.
Well, how do you reconcile that with the empirical, critical belief that experience is at the root of all phenomena?
I think you'll find that a concept can be philosophically valid, even if theologically meaningless.
So what you're saying is that before Plato existed, someone had to have the idea of Plato.
Oh, you've no idea what a relief it is for me to have such a stimulating philosophical discussion. There are so few intellectuals about these days. Tell me, what do you think of the assertion that the semiotic thickness of a performed text varies according to the redundancy of auxiliary performance codes?
Yes. I do like that last big line. He is like advancing on the Doctor until he basically has him pinned against the wall.
It's very good. I didn't know what any of it means. Though the last bit, specifically the bit about the thickness of a performed text, blah, 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 that is specifically from a book that I have bought called Doctor Who, The Unfolding Text. Andrew Cartmell recommended that everyone who was writing on the show read it. And this was put in, I think this was put in as a subtle dig at Andrew Cartmell. Like, you made me read this nonsense. You made me read this pretentious bullshit. I'm going to put this in the script. Though I do want to read, because I posted the whole thing in a group chat we have with friend of the show, Hallie, and she sort of deconstructed it. I think we should read her reinterpretation of what those very big words actually mean. Because, like I said, as it happened, I was like, I have no idea what they're saying. Did you have any idea of what they were saying?
Well, so I was like following them until they get to kind of like the big long thing. And I was like, wait, this isn't philosophy. And I recognize some of those words, but not in the order that they've put them in. Not arranged as they are. And part of the reason why is because it's a lot of critical, what am I thinking of? Like literary criticism stuff in like a way that I never really got into. Mm. So vocabulary that I don't necessarily have.
All right, so you're the doctor again. So this is what the scene means, might mean, according to our friend Hallie.
Excuse me, are you religious?
I think that most educated people think believing in gods is primitive superstition.
I see. That's a very interesting concept.
I think that we all kind of make our own truth.
How does that jive with repeatable scientific truth?
I don't think you need to be religious to believe in truth beyond what we currently know.
So you do believe there is truth, that reality is only a reflection of, and the truth must exist for it to be absorbed into scientific knowledge.
Oh, you've no idea what a relief it is for me to have such a stimulating philosophical discussion. There are so few intellectuals about these days. Tell me, do you think that the more diverse perspectives involved in the creation of a work of art gives the work of art depth?
Yes.
So there you go. Thank you, Hallie. Why haven't we done reenactments before on this show? It's fun.
No, I hated it. But yeah, so Joe did buy a copy of this book, and I think we're going to have like a book club reading it, which will be interesting because it's definitely outside of my reading level.
Yeah, I'm dumb as hell, so we'll see how this goes. This continues a little bit. Glitz gets on the ship, but is stopped by Balazs. She puts a gun to his head. And then the doctor comes on board, and she says, let me see, where is it? She says, what are you doing here? And the doctor says, that's a very difficult question. Why is everyone around here so preoccupied with metaphysics? And then Glitz says, I think she's going to kill us, doctor. And he goes, ah, an existentialist.
It's a good scene.
But then they basically discuss things, and she lets them go because she doesn't really have beef with them. She's just wanting to leave. So in the next scene, the sculptor finishes the ice statue. Kane says, no one is worthy enough to look at this beautiful piece of art. And then kills the sculptor by doing the, you know, face smush thing with his hands.
I just don't understand why. Why this scene happened.
To establish that Kane is a psychopath.
Like, this is all just to not pay your artists.
Then Mel and Ace are chased by the zombie crew.
Mel and Ace are chased?
Mel and Ace are chased. And they chuck Nitro 9 at them, but it doesn't work. So, listen. Richter 8 destroyed San Francisco. This is not 9 on the Richter scale. Just saying. Anyway, Glitz and the Doctor are also chased, but by the dragon. And there's a very funny scene where they see the dragon, they run through a door, they shut the door, and then the dragon starts burning through the door. Because like but before you realize that's what's happening, Glitz is like, what do we do now? And the doctor's like, I don't think we're done running from the dragon yet, basically. And he jumps out of the way because you realize the flames are just shooting right into the back of the doctor. That looked really dangerous.
It didn't look dangerous.
But the dragon burns a hole through the door, knocks the door down, and Glitz points his gun at it. And the doctor goes, no, Glitz, don't. This thing happens so slowly. There's like no urgency to it at all. He points the gun. The doctor looks at the gun. And then he goes, no, Glitz, don't. Then shoves the gun out of the way as he fires. And then he's like, why? And he's like, there's no right to kill this creature. And then he grabs Glitz's gun and throws it over his shoulder. And then the dragon just looks at them for a second and then fucks off. And they're like, why didn't it try to kill us? And like, I don't know. Let's go find out. But it like happens so slowly.
Also, the dragon was trying so hard to get into that room. It gets into that room and goes, oh man, why did I come in here again? Damn it. And leaves. Maybe if I go back to where I was before, I'll remember.
I mean, we later learn that this dragon's not evil, but why was it shooting at them in the first place?
It's had cool laser beams for years and never, like, a chance to use them.
Or maybe he just thought they were bad and then learns, oh, they're not actually, they're not here to steal stuff. Well, Glitz is, but anyway.
I figured that out between trying to cut through the door and actually getting through the door?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know what? He saw the doctor throw the gun away. I was like, oh, they're not here to with malicious intent. Sure. I don't know. Anyway.
Why not?
There's a scene where Balazs has a whole scene with a character whose name I can't pronounce, so it doesn't matter because this character's going to be dead very shortly. But she has a conversation about like how she was 16 when Cain bought her, and she's been here for like 20 years, and she hates it. And,
hey, gross. Why is a serial obsessed with 16-year-olds?
That's a good question. And then, like, how awful it is that they are basically slaves, and she convinces this guy to help her attempt to kill him. Why, when he's sleeping in his little sleepy chamber, they're going to turn the heat up. So, and he agrees to this. Ace and Mel have been on the run from the zombies, and they hide out. Because, like, I think Mel hits her head, and Ace has to drag her underneath some stairs. They have this little heart-to-heart chat where Ace tells Mel that she feels like she felt like she never belonged on Earth. Like, her parents weren't her parents, and
this character is not straight and may not be neurotypical.
And she's like, she had a job as a waitress and she hated it. And she just wanted to, she felt like she belonged out there in space, you know? And then she got actually wound up in space, but she also wound up a waitress again. And there was nowhere for her to run off to. Like, she wanted to run off to space, but now that she's in space and basically doing the same thing, there's nowhere else for her to run to. That's really sad. But then she also tells Mel, she's like, I'm going to tell you something I never told anyone. Ace isn't my real name. My real name is Dorothy. And like, that's, she's like, that's what like convinced me that my parents weren't my parents, because my parents wouldn't name me Dorothy. That name's lame as fuck. And anyway, it's a cute scene. But then the doctor and Glitz find Mel and Ace, and they've all sort of teamed back up. And then one of the zombie, frozen zombie, former member of Glitz's crew comes for them. And then Glitz is just like trying to like refresh, like, you know, hey, don't kill me. You know me. We're buds. Do you remember that time we got super drunk? And the doctor's like, he won't remember you. He'll have amnesia. And then he's like, I remember. He's like, unless he really hated you. They're backing up. And then that crew member is shot by the dragon. The dragon shoots its laser beam at them. And then they're like, oh, cool. And like, the doctor tips his hat to the dragon, and the dragon just reaches his hand up to its head and then also just raises its hand like it's tipping a hat, but it doesn't have a hat. It's very cute.
It is cute.
And they follow the dragon as it leaves. The guy that Balazs convinced to help her turns the heat up, but Cain wakes up, sees that his statue is melted, and he's very annoyed because he killed the sculptor.
Where's he gonna... Right, he can't. This is exactly why he shouldn't have done that.
Right? You've got to have somebody for maintenance. And so he gets mad, kills that guy, and turns the AC back up. And then he goes and he kills Balazs as well.
That is how I feel when I wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, it's too hot.
That whole plot line is ended now. I wanted Balazs to get away, and she didn't, and that's kind of tragic.
Mm.
But the dragon takes everyone back to the singing trees room with all the icicles and beams some lasers at them. And then it shows a hologram explaining who Cain and Ixana are. They're criminals who are getting away. She killed herself. They imprisoned him on this planet. And the dragon is the jailer. But it's not only the jailer has a treasure. Like, inside of the dragon, the dragon's head opens up.
It looks pretty fucking cool.
It does. It looks really fucking cool. And a little crystal, like, rises up and, like, electricity is coming off of it. It's the power source for... Well, we don't know what it's a power source for, but it is a power source. And that is the treasure. That's the thing that Cain wants. And also, the dragon is what brought Cain here. And that is the end of the head opening up is the cliffhanger? Oh, no, the cliffhanger is Cain's listening in through the map and says, the dragon fire will be mine!
So now he knows.
And that is the end of episode 2, and we're now into episode 3, which I have called Ant Hunt. So, Cain says to his mem, give me that dragon and remove its head. Kill it, bring its head back. The doctor is...
Is the dragon a robot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure, why not? The doctor is curious about Cain's home planet because they say where Cain comes from. And he's like, that sounds familiar. Why have I heard it before? And heads off. The dragon wants to show him something, so they head off together. But he tells everyone else to stay put. Mel suggests that they play a game of I Spy. And Ace gives Mel a look like, that's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard of. But then later we cut back and they are indeed playing I Spy. Then we meet two new characters we've never met before named Bazin and McLuhan. Way to introduce some characters in the last fucking episode. And like, they try to act like these are characters we've known all along.
And care about.
I don't.
They're just replacements for the other two characters who already died.
They literally are, yeah. It's basically like a cop and a rookie. That's what their vibe is. This woman's like, you ever been on an ant hunt before?
And he's like, what?
And she says, ant is a aggressive non-terrestrial. And he's like, no. And then he's like, got a small pistol. And she's like, that's not gonna cut it. If you're gonna go out with me on this ant hunt, you gotta bring the real artillery. And then she just throws his gun away and pulls out just a ludicrously large weapon.
I don't understand what this cereal is about.
They also put a tracker on this big-ass gun and are using it to find the dragon, the ant, the aggressive non-terrestrial. Oh, God, is the little girl an aggressive non-terrestrial? Because the tracker picks up the little girl on it at one point. And they're like, why is it picking up the little girl? Is it because she's an aggressive non-terrestrial? They never explain why the girl is showing up on the tracker.
Huh.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. But they put all this tracker on it so they can find the alien. And it's literally just... It's, again, the movie Alien. Aliens, the sequel, had just come out, like, the year before. So it's very clear that they're just trying to make Alien. And because there's a scene, I don't know, you haven't seen Alien. There's a scene where they use a tracker to try to find the alien on board the ship. It's literally the exact same scene. Kane wants his men to drive everyone out to the Nosferatu. And he's like, cause a ruckus, get everybody to leave. So they head out to do that. The dragon takes the doctor to a very out-of-date solar system chart to show him Kane's home planet. And the doctor's like, this is all wrong. This doesn't look right. Things have changed. We need to get back to my TARDIS. I want to take a look at a current star chart. So they leave. Then Kane's men burst into the restaurant, shoots the restaurant manager guy, the guy who previously had milkshake atop his noggin.
What a bad day.
And they shoot a couple others, and they herd everyone else out. Except the little girl, Stellar, was left on her own. She was just sitting at the table by herself. I don't know where her mom went. To piss, I guess. And the little girl crawls under the table and starts playing with her teddy bear. Then the Kane's men come in and start shooting, and they herd everyone out. But they don't get the little girl. And what proceeds the rest of the episode is just scenes of, like, empty rooms with the little girl just wandering around. She drinks somebody's milkshake. She just goes around in these empty rooms. I don't know what the point of these scenes are.
I don't know what the cereal's about.
I don't know either.
But these scenes do make it feel like the cereal knows what it's about. So if someone knows and could explain it to me, I'd appreciate it. Because yeah, we just cut back to this little girl every so often, like, exploring the empty spaceship. Because at a certain point, everyone else is gone.
The two new people, Bazin and McLuhan, find the dragon, and the dragon distracts them so the doctor can run off. But then they continue to follow the dragon. But the doctor meets up back with Ace and Mel. But Glitz has left. He's going to try to get back to his ship. Bazin and McLuhan find the little girl, and they straight up shoot at her. And they're like, oh shit, that's a little girl. But then they leave, and the dragon finds the little girl, picks her up, and carries her away to the mall area and drops her off, and she's like, bye, dragon, and then leaves. It's so bizarre. It's cute, but again, I have no idea what the purpose of this character is. But then everyone is rushing out. They get onto the Nosferatu. Glitz runs up behind them just as, like, the last person gets through and the door closes and he doesn't get on the ship. And he's like, no, the ship can't leave without me. And the ship takes off, flies out, and then Kane presses a button. And the ship explodes, killing everyone on board.
Whole ship full of people just explodes. And you'll never guess how we decide to handle this. We never bring it up again.
Yeah, we don't.
We just killed off every single extra in the whole serial. And there's never, like, an emotional beat about it.
There's a joke about it when Glitz, because Glitz, like, swears vengeance on Kane at this point for destroying his ship. And he wanders back into the, like, main area. And the mom comes up. And, like, first Glitz is like, ugh! And then she's like, have you seen my little girl? I can't find her anywhere. Where did everyone go?
Where did she go?
Yeah.
Where was she?
I'm telling you, she was pissing.
That's, like, real Donna Noble vibes.
It is. But then Mel and Ace and the doctor go onto the TARDIS Which, because, like, we're going to go to my ship, and then they get to the TARDIS, and she's like, are you joking? This is your ship? And then she does the thing where she goes on board, and she's like, hold on a second. And they have this whole discussion about, like, how the TARDIS works while the Doctor is just not paying attention. He's just on his mission. And you just, like, see him doing shit while you hear them in the background, like, well, it's like, you know, it's another dimension.
It's transdimensional.
Yeah. He looks at a more current star chart and realizes that Kane's home planet doesn't exist anymore. And he's like, well, now we got to go talk to Kane. And so they head out. And then Ace is like, my room's very close to here. I want to get some more Nitro 9. So they're like, cool. Well, if we don't meet up, if you don't catch back up to us, we'll meet you at your room. She goes to her room and is grabbed by Kane. He kidnaps her. Meanwhile, Bazin and McLuhan, the cop duo, they kill the dragon and they proceed to cut its head off. They get like a little laser pointer thing and just slice it through its head, and then they pick its head up and move it. The head opens up, the crystal comes out, and like as a last defense thing, kills Bazin and McLuhan. They're dead.
Oh no, those characters.
They were just 2 days away from retirement. And then the Doctor and Mel come across this, and the Doctor takes the crystal. Then Kane gets on the speakers and says, I will trade you that crystal for Ace. I have Ace. Let's do a trade. And then in yet another weird-ass scene with the girl, she's wandered into Kane's chambers. She puts her teddy bear on his little sleep chamber thing, gets a handkerchief, and tucks her little teddy bear in to go to sleep. And then she says goodnight, Teddy, and kisses him on the head. What the fuck is happening?
I don't have answers for you.
Is it like paralleling what's happening? I don't know. I can't figure it out.
You think it's some thematic thing. I think it's someone's niece.
So they all head up to Kane, and then they bring the crystal. Kane explains that the crystal is his key to getting out of here. Literally, it is a key to the space. Like, this whole ice world, this whole colony is actually a spaceship. And the Dragonfire crystal powers that spaceship. That's how they brought him here, was on this spaceship, on this abandoned hill on this planet. The dragon was his jailer, but also the power source to the ship. So he's been trying to get that back so he can leave. And then, like, the whole colony, like, they put it in his little, he has, like, a little TARDIS console thing. He puts it in that. And then the whole ship takes off and starts flying into space. And he's like, I'm going to go back to my home planet and get revenge and kill all those motherfuckers who imprisoned me here. And the Doctor's like, you can't. Your planet doesn't exist. It like exploded like thousands of years ago. Cause this guy's like immortal, I guess. He's been on this planet for thousands of years. And he's like, what? And he's like, yeah, look. And shows him like the star chart and shit. And he's like, well, I've got no purpose now. And then opens the windows.
Oh my God. Why do we, why?
Because the writer had just seen Raiders of the Lost Ark. The window opens up, the sun rushes in. And this motherfucker melts.
It's awful.
His skin falls off. It falls off his skull. His skin falls off his skull. And it's not like this is like an alien creature. This dude is just looks like a pale human. They very specifically didn't put any red paint in the thing, so there wouldn't be any blood.
Okay.
But it's still fucking terrifying. It's awful. It's
I literally
gross.
Could not imagine seeing this as a child.
Ugh, it reminds me, it's the scene from the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, basically. It's that, they also kind of remind me of that scene in Poltergeist where the guy pulls his own face apart, but.
I've never watched scary movies. That happened?
It happens in Poltergeist. Well, the guy just pulls all the flesh off his face, and he's fine. It's just like a hallucination. That movie's rated PG.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I think Raiders of the Lost Ark might be PG-13.
Raiders of the Lost Ark is why there's a PG-13, right?
And Poltergeist!
Okay.
I mean, Poltergeist was before there was a PG-13, and it was part of the reason why they're like, maybe we need a slightly stronger rating, because this movie has a guy just pulling his face off of his face. Gross. Anyway, Kane's dead. Glitz decides that this ship is now his, and he renames it the Nosferatu 2. Then there's a very sad scene. This was actually Sylvester McCoy's audition scene. Like, this scene was just written for the audition. It wasn't going to be in an episode. And he's like, it's a very good scene. Let's put it in the show. So it becomes Mel's goodbye scene.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Which I wouldn't mind reading a little bit of it, because it's It was very good. She says, well, I suppose it's time. And he says, time? Funny old business time. It delights in frustrating your plans. All Cain's bitterness and hatred thwarted by a quirk of time. And then she says, no, I meant, I suppose it's time I should be going. He says, oh, time that I left. Yes, well, you could be right. Time for you to go. Funny old business time. Well, if you must go. And she says, before I go, I'd like to say, he's like, there's no point, Mel. No point hanging around wasting time. No, I'm not going to leave until I've said my piece. I just want to say that there's no time, Mel. Oh, all right, you win. I do. I usually do. I'm going now. That's right. Yes, you're going. Been gone for ages. Already gone. Still here. Just arrived. Haven't even met you yet. It all depends on who you are and how you look at it. Strange business time. And then she says goodbye. Scene. Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's a terrible life of choice. She's like,
I'm gonna go with Glitz.
I'm just gonna stay and keep an eye on Glitz. Why? My God. Make better choices with your life. What a weird companion, too. Like, what a weird introduction and exit.
I do like this scene a lot, though. He also says, think about me when you're living your life one day after another, all in a neat pattern. Think about the homeless traveler in his old police box with his days like crazy paving.
That's some good writing.
And then she said, who said anything about home? I've got much more crazy things to do yet. Go off with Glitz. That's pretty crazy.
There never is when a companion leaves, like, any indication that this might be something that they would enjoy doing. It's always like, well, I've made this life-altering decision. Goodbye. Like, when did you do that?
And he's going to send Ace off with him, too. Like, Ace is planning, they're all going to go to Perryvale. I don't know where Perryvale is. It's an Earth place. After, like, Mel and the Doctor hug, and it's cute. But she also is like, hey, Ace doesn't have anywhere to be. Wink, wink. The Doctor's like, basically, he's like, you're going to go off to Perryvale. And she's like, yeah, with them. And he's like, or would you rather take the scenic route?
Cute.
And she's like, you're saying I can go with you? And he's like, yeah. And she says, Ace! And he said, but there are three rules. One, I'm in charge. Whatever you say, Professor. Two, I'm not the Professor. I'm the Doctor. Whatever you want. And the third, well, I'll think up the third by the time we get back to Perryvale. And then they smile at each other, and it's very adorable. And I'm super excited to see where the Doctor and Ace go from here on out. Then we have a weird scene with the fucking kid again. The mom finally finds her kid, and she it looks like she's about to go in the TARDIS. She, like, grabs the TARDIS door, and then the mom's like, what the fuck are you doing? We gotta go. And she grabs her kid, and she giggles as she watches the TARDIS dematerialize.
I don't understand. Like this whole place is deserted now. And this mom seems to have no awareness that anything has happened whatsoever. Nor does the kid. They just went to the mall, had a nice time, and now they're leaving. And then they're going to get home and they're going to be watching the news. And it's going to be like, tragedy struck. There are no survivors at the whole of this mall. And they're going to be like, what?
That's it. That's the end of Dragonfire. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back for final thoughts.
If you were a monster kid growing up, if you enjoyed Saturday mornings watching Monster Movie Matinee, or staying up all night watching the midnight feature, then Monster Attack is the podcast for you. We not only look at classic old monster movies, we share our experience growing up as a monster kid. Join us every Monday for Monster Attack.
And we're back. Tony, do you know what time it is?
Well, I thought the break was going to be longer. I was eating a snack.
Oh, it's not snack time.
Are you sure it's not snack time?
It's a different time. Do you know what time it is?
It's time for final thoughts.
Yes, it is time for final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
It's fine. You know, it's whatever. It's not the best episode this season. Because Paradise Towers and Delta and the Bannermen were both very fun episodes. Paradise Towers was good. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Delta and the Bannermen was necessarily as good as it was fun. But it was good.
Correct.
Time of the Rani was kind of fun, but a little wobbly. This one has some interesting things, but it just never comes together. There's a lot of interesting things happening. I think Cain is terrifying. I love Ace. Glitz is fun. Mel is actually really good in this one. I love their goodbye. And there's like that I do enjoy the terrifying death of Kane. The dragon design is really cool. The set design is really cool. There's a lot of cool stuff. But none of it like coalesces into a whole.
Yeah, I mean, is it your turn for snack?
Turn for snacks.
I would say that this is kind of a mess of a serial that has some really, really strong highlights in it. You know, there are individual scenes. There are lines that are amazing. Like, Ace, right off the bat, is a character that I really enjoy. But looking at it as a whole is like, it's actually really lucky that it has the cliffhanger in it so that it can, that makes it like a notable serial.
I forgot about the cliffhanger, yeah.
I mean, it actually has, it has the cliffhanger, it's got the introduction of Ace and the goodbye of Mel.
And the last episode with Glitz.
And there's like you said, the strong design choices, there's really memorable moments that are traumatizing.
Or goofy as hell.
Yeah. So there's like really good, there's like the best of Doctor Who in bits and pieces in this serial, but not altogether as a whole. That's it. I mean, there's not really much more that can be said about it than that.
That's Dragonfire, baby. If you like this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on WatchYourAssLawn.com. You can also find our podcast, our Patreon, our Amazon wish list, and more at Linktree/Watchathon. That's linktr.ee/watchathon. And I want to say a special thanks to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden. Check them out at mattgolden.xyz or xyz if you're feeling British. And I want to give a special shout out to Vince and EL for providing us with our amazing theme song.
Thank you, Vince.
Check out more of their music at soundcloud.com/VinceandEL or VinceandEL.bandcamp.com. And tune in next time when we're not going to watch more Sylvester McCoy. We've just given up. We're not going to do it.
We're going to stop right here. Right here.
No, for the next two episodes, I have been trying to catch up on making this podcast, and I've got a week to edit this episode, but like holidays are coming up, so I wanted to give myself just a little bit of a break. We are going to release episodes for the next two episodes are going to be our Patreon bonus episodes. It's going to be the first two Patreon bonus episodes that we talk about the new season, the current season of Doctor Who. We're going to talk about the Flux, the Halloween Apocalypse. So the next episode is going to be Flux, the Halloween Apocalypse. 2 weeks after that, it's going to be Flux, whatever the second one's called, War of the Sontarans. And then we'll be back. Hopefully we'll be back. I might do a third one if I don't get things done in time. But we should be back with Remembrance of the Daleks. We'll be back with that in January. You can go ahead and hear those episodes if you go to our Patreon and subscribe at the $3 or more level. And you'll also get the rest of our bonus episodes that talk about the last season of Doctor Who, this season of Doctor Who, and a bunch of like extra stuff like comics and whatnot. So please do that. $3. It's only $3 a month. You get all sorts of bonus episodes. But until next time, keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic, parasocial way.
I've got much more crazy things to do yet.
Ace!
Tell me. What do you think of the assertion that the semiotic thickness of a performed text varies according to the redundancy of auxiliary performance codes?
Yes.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.